Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, sometimes confounded movie viewer.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that works as therapy for the three of us who put it on by looking at the whole range of what cinema has to offer, the good and the bad. We're able to approach our everyday lives with at least a slight bit better perspective. That, anyway, is the theory. We'll put it to the test for this show as we tackle a pair of films that involve characters who find themselves in dire straits. The first is titled The Chronology of Water and is an adaptation of Lydia Yukanovich's memoir of the same name. The second, titled Resurrection, hails from China and is a sci-fi step into characters facing dream lives and time warps. Let's begin with a bit of reality. And that reality belongs to the aforementioned Lydia Yukanovich, played by the British actress Imogene Poots. It's hard to say which is more relevant when discussing The Chronology of Water, the fact that it's an adaptation of Yukanovich's 2011 memoir, or that the film itself is the first directorial effort by the actress Kristen Stewart. As a memoir, the film takes us on a non-linear exploration of Yukanovich's life, from her childhood through her years as a competitive swimmer, her descent into drugs and eventual emergence as a PhD-holding writing instructor and award-winning writer, all shaped by the sexual abuse she endured at the hands of her father, played by Michael Epp. Poots is suitably intense throughout, and while it's fair to say that director Stewart at times falls prey to too much artsy excess, her adaptation of Yukanovich's The Chronology of Water packs an emotional punch that isn't for the faint of heart.
Of course, I was attracted to this film because of its focus on water. I do believe I was a mermaid in a past life, just putting that out there, but I digress. So we are introduced to this woman, Lydia, and there's sort of a gradual rollout about what's happened to her. So it's sort of a montage of current events and then past, with a focus on her relationship, so to speak, with her dad. So he encourages her in many respects in her swimming aspirations as a young child. But then we realize, oh, their relationship has changed in multiple ways. Not good for Lydia. And so she tries to escape from what seems to be her inevitable abuse and goes off to college. And we see that she sort of engages in this girls gone wild behavior just when we think, oh, there's some salvation for her. So in The Chronology of Water, we basically have the father, two daughters, and the mom. I thought this film did a masterful job at looking at the way abuse sort of permeates families. And we are hoping at some point that the mom will come to grips with what's transpired because she knew or should have known what was going on. But we see how this childhood experience shapes the rest of Lydia's life. And we, again, are hoping that things will go well for her. And ultimately, I guess we could say that it does. But there are many twists and turns in her path to that coming to grips with her experiences when she's an adult. And she does that, and I'll defer to the writers in the group, largely through her ability to channel these experiences into what turns out to be award-winning writings.
Yeah, and the movie is, The Chronology of Water, is sort of told in the same kind of fractured, impressionistic style that she writes with, but that also reflects her mental state, this idea of, you know, recovered memories and stream of consciousness. And I guess we could call this a biopic. I mean, it's about a real person. It's based on a memoir. It's not about somebody extremely famous, except maybe in writing circles. But we've complained about biopics over the years that aren't as complicated as the people they're about, that sort of sand down their rough edges. And this movie doesn't do that. It doesn't shy away from any of that, sometimes to an uncomfortable degree. And early on, Lydia, as played by Imogen Poots, is impulsive. She's volatile. She's sometimes violent. Like, we see her hitting her
and
boyfriend.
Mean.
Yes. And the movie doesn't make excuses for that behavior. It doesn't wave it away, but it does explain why she's behaving the way that she does. And I agree with you, Dan, that sometimes the chronology of water, it does feel like it's overwhelming us with its own style. And it's a long movie, too. But I also admired how confrontational it is, how jagged it is, that it's almost at times it's like pushing our faces into the screen, sort of forcing us to contend with the thought processes and the trauma of this very difficult but obviously very brilliant person. And I want to say that Imogen Poots, I've liked her in other movies. She usually gets cast as like the girlfriend or the best friend.
Well, because she's this sort of blonde, blue-eyed, looks like the quintessential American girl. But, oh, as we've noted before, she's British.
Yeah. And, you know, so I've seen her in things. I've liked her in things. But she's fantastic in this movie. I mean, this is a raw performance. It's an uncompromising performance. And she throws her whole body into it, sometimes literally. I mean, I can imagine a lot of performers not wanting to take this role. Yeah. So kudos to her for doing it. I think she's great in it.
It's a brave performance in many ways because a lot of the shots are – just of her face, close-ups of her face. Mm-hmm. And so you have to read the emotions in them. What I wanted to say was I love the point you made about this being probably well-known mostly in writerly circles. I went to the University of Oregon, went to graduate school there. And so I remember hearing stories of the novel that was written by Kesey and all the students. And, you know, so everybody knew
Kesey
about it then.
Played sort of ironically by Jim Belushi.
Jim Belushi plays Kesey. And, you know, to me that was kind of wacky casting.
I loved that.
I liked it too.
I thought that was inspired casting.
The problem is that I have attended readings of Kesey in person, and so he isn't anything like what the real Ken Kesey was like. So,
okay, humble
but at any rate,
that's okay. Oh, yeah, back in the day.
Back in the day.
The thing that also the movie does well is it shows how this sexual abuse has affected Lydia's ability to have intimate relationships as an adult.
It makes the point that once people have suffered trauma early on in their lives, it tends to haunt them the rest of their lives in one way or another.
And often they inflict the same trauma on other people.
Precisely. Right. Yeah, and so we see her in three different relationships and we're wondering, could this possibly work? And we suspect no. The other thing I wanted to mention about this film is the portrayal of the older sister.
By Thora Birch, yes.
Yeah, because she's almost unrecognizable. And then all of a sudden you're watching and you're like, oh, that's Thora Birch. She and her sister have this unbreakable bond because they experienced some similar things. And they seemingly approached it differently, or it played out differently for each of them. But we always wonder what's the role of the mom, you know, in this particular circumstance. And having done some work in family law, I was always surprised that mom's response was not necessarily what I would have predicted. And so, you know, sometimes moms were truly jealous or envious of the fact that dad had chosen one of the daughters or chosen a daughter over them. And so I thought that was realistic as well, that mom sort of, you know, backing off, not wanting to deal with it. Now, there was one thing that happens closer to the end that I sort of had an issue with, but if it's based on real life, it's based on real life. And that was sort of the connection or reconnection between dad and daughter. And that, for some reason, didn't seem authentic to me, but maybe it happened.
I thought that was a great scene because I was not expecting that person to show up in her life again. And then when he does reappear, you go, oh, things have happened between then and now. Mm-hmm. Going back to the supporting cast, we mentioned Ken Kesey, but Lydia goes, I mean, in real life, she did this. She was part of a group of students under Ken Kesey who they all collaborated on a novel.
Yep.
And so Belushi shows up. He's only in it for a couple of scenes, and then he disappears. I really like that. Also, Kim Gordon from Sonic Youth shows
right.
up.
Oh, right. That was a fascinating photographer.
An interesting cameo. And it was so great to see Thora Birch. She hasn't been in anything for years. So I really liked the way that Kristen Stewart put this cast together. I also have to say that, mean, the movie is rated R. This is the kind of movie that the MPAA, like 15 or 20 years ago, would have slapped with an NC-17 because it is so frank and it's sexual and it has women having sex with women and with men.
Yep.
So it is frank, but I think in a way that really gets you in the head of this character and really explains what's going on. And I look forward to what Kristen Stewart does as a director after this, because I think this is a really strong debut.
Yeah. The only qualms I had was it's like a first-time director.
Sure.
I'm going to put all these cool things in it, and some of it doesn't work.
Yep.
But ultimately, the
most of it does.
Most of it does, exactly. That was our discussion of The Chronology of Water. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to discuss the Chinese film Resurrection. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
As a public radio fan, you often hear that we're supported by listeners like you. We say it all the time because it's the truth. Continual support from our community keeps us going. You can give back by starting a sustaining membership, a recurring monthly donation to SPR. Giving $10 to $20 a month is a great way to support our station. To begin your membership, visit SpokanePublicRadio.org and look for the red donate button. Thank you.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I talked about the adaptation of Lydia Yukanovich's memoir, The Chronology of Water. Let's now turn to something completely different, though the characters involved are also forced to face their own personal tribulations. Even if you're familiar with the work of Chinese filmmaker Bi Gan, and I'd be surprised if you were, you might not be prepared for the kaleidoscope, the virtual visual jambalaya of images, themes, and mind-bending cinematic brainstorms that he puts on the screen in his 2-hour and 40-minute movie marathon he calls Resurrection. At once, a photo essay about the power of dreaming as told through a whole array of human senses and a surrealistic study of existence seen through a distinctly Chinese worldview, Gan's film is at times as off-putting as it is ultimately a brilliant, arresting stab at pure cinema. To try to give a plot synopsis would take too much time, not to mention effort, at least for me. So I'm going to request that you give it a try, Nathan.
Okay. Well, I don't know if the movie necessarily requires a plot synopsis, because I agree with you that it is.
Because I don't think you could do it anyway.
I can. But also, it's pure imagery, right? But it at least has a central conceit, which is that humanity has stopped dreaming, except for a select few. And the movie takes us through a series of dreams that one of them is having. And it's like watching disconnected scenes from wildly different movies almost stitched together.
You got to make the point that those who dream will die, and the other ones are the ones who don't dream have immortal life.
Right. And even then, like, I think that setup, it's not that it's a MacGuffin or anything, but I think you don't even really need it necessarily to get into the flow of the movie. But we have that table set. And so there's a framing sequence that I mentioned that it's sort of like wandering through a lot of different movies. There's this framing sequence that's almost like a German expressionist silent film. Then it becomes a sort of wartime noir about this detective who,
like, Wong Kar-wai could have directed
that. Yes. There are actually a couple segments where I thought Wong Kar-wai could have directed this. But he's entranced by this musician. There's this mysterious suitcase. Feels kind of like a Lost Highway era David Lynch. Then there's this allegory about a Buddha statue that contains a demon. And then we get, I think, the most conventional of the individual scenes, which is this con artist that takes a young girl under his wing and teaches her all the tricks of the trade. And then finally, the last of these scenes is this single long take. It's about a half hour long take that's set on New Year's Eve of 1999. And it involves romance and crime and vampires. And
could be bad?
Well, and so this sounds like kind of a mess, but I think if I had to find a common thread through all of the chapters in Resurrection, it's that they're all about someone or something revealing their or its true form. I mean, that's something that happens in all of these. and Be Gone, the director, he ties all of this back to the idea that movies are dreams and that watching a film can be something of a collective hallucination, which sounds really corny, and lots of other directors have tried to do that same thing. But he pulls it off here because, I mean, the craft on display is just remarkable. There were shots in this movie where I almost laughed because they were so beautiful and clever, and I didn't think that's where the shot was going. Yeah. It's 2 hours and 40 minutes, you said. I was shocked at how quickly this went.
I agree. I was surprised. At the same time, Nathan, I am going to push back a little, and this may be one of the only times I've said this on our show. I believe that people's experience could be enhanced by knowing something about this film in advance. And the reason why I say that is it's operating on so many different levels. So there's the visual imagery that is amazing throughout. And the set design is incredible because it switches among all these different settings. The characters, the Deliriants, are the ones who are still allowed to dream, as you pointed out, take different forms. So it's divided into multiple parts. It reflects different aspects of cinema during the time period that it is focused on. It also deals with the senses in terms of how we perceive or accept information. And then there's the whole dream vampire aspect to it. Mm-hmm. And I just thought it was so sad that people couldn't dream anymore, because I think dreaming is the best. Shout out to nicotine patches for the hallucinatory experience, just saying. But I did not know what was going on at first, and I was confounded,
and
as I said.
And it throws you right in, and it is sort of mind-boggling.
And I was sort of – and then I got with it, but that took longer than I expected. I finally kind of figured it out, and I believe that Resurrection – some people could benefit by having – our review to rely on or something else maybe that they've read about
some
the
sort
film.
Of a guide, something to say, all right, this is what you can expect.
You do have to sort of acquiesce to the movie eventually. But I think if you get on its wavelength and get with its rhythms, I think you start to figure it out. And honestly, it's one of those movies that, like, Resurrection Explained, it maybe doesn't even help that much, because it's really – it doesn't follow a traditional narrative, right?
Nope.
So traditional answers
won't help
you, right?
No, it's so multi-layered.
You, right?
So multi-layered.
I just – by the time we got to the one single take, I was so enthralled in what I was seeing. I kept going, is he going to cut? Is he going to cut? I kept turning to Mary Pat. This is still a single take.
Yeah.
I mean, multiple levels down back alleys, introducing characters here and there, violence, shootings, and then running off, and then vampires.
And then there's a time lapse where you end up into the next day, and the camera still hasn't moved away. I should say that Be Gone, the director, his previous feature was called Long Day's Journey Into Night. Now, it's not that Long Day's Journey Into Night, but that movie, which was shot in 3D, I unfortunately did not get to see it that way. It has an almost hour-long single take in the middle of it. So this is like his thing. And sometimes that can feel gimmicky. Sometimes it can feel like showing off. But when it's done with so much craft and it's so sweeping and fluid, it doesn't bother me. And I just kind of go along with the sensations
of it. Makes me want to think of other famous single take scenes. And of course, I'm always drawn to Goodfellas. The nightclub scene is such an amazing scene.
Opening shot of Touch of Evil. There's another one.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, speaking of other movies, Resurrection really reminded me of a movie that I love. We've talked about it on the show before because I love it more than either of you, which is Leos Carax's great film, Holy Motors. Do you remember that movie?
Yes.
Which also begins in a mysterious movie theater. It also has a character who's sort of transforming himself as he wanders from one scene to another, and each scene kind of feels like it's from a different movie. And this film, Resurrection, is often as audacious as Holy Motors. It has real feeling behind the craft. I mean, there's a shot early on in this movie where I thought, oh, I'm going to love this. And it's in the silent film section where there's a long overhead shot of a set of it's an opium den, and it's teeming with people, and there's stuff going on in the far background. There's stuff going on in the middle distance. And then in the background, a giant human hand comes out and sort of pulls part of the set apart like it's a dollhouse. And it's little touches like that where you're like, oh, I have to be on my toes because this movie could do anything. It can be anything. It can go in any direction. And it does.
Yeah.
And if that's the kind of thing that sounds intriguing to you, then this is quite a ride.
Yeah. Another scene like that is at the very beginning in the silent part of the film, we are introduced to a character, the deliriant that Mary Pat talked about. And he's just got all this makeup on. It's just amazing, like an old, terribly deformed person. Later on in the film, you see one of the characters making up this person.
Yes. Yeah.
And so
which is
another,
right out of Holy Motors, too.
Exactly. It's another reminder, hey, we're in a movie here.
We should also say that main character is played by an actor named Jackson Yee, who, transforms throughout the movie. I looked him up. So he's extremely popular in China. He was in a huge boy band. And it's very interesting to see him in this role. Also, this movie, Resurrection, was a massive hit in China. It might have been because of him. But shout out to him because he does a great job in this, playing all these different parts.
And you would have expect that we would have heard of this director previously because this film is overwhelming.
Yep.
That's the best word for it. And he did, I believe, got a special jury prize or something at Cannes.
At Cannes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And well-deserved.
Oh,
because
yeah.
I definitely want to go back and see Long Day's Journey into
Night.
Or not and, the night. Okay.
And let's point out, he's 36 years old.
Yeah.
This is not a 55-year-old veteran filmmaker.
But it kind of feels like that, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Like
absolutely.
It has a wistfulness and a melancholy.
I've said before that I took film courses at University of California, San Diego with Manny Farber. This is the kind of movie he would have loved. And he would have broken it up and forced all of the students to just take 15 minutes of it and tell me what you see.
Mm-hmm.
Resurrection. Like I said, I could not define the film. I could not.
Nathan,
just
I thought you did
away.
A great job.
I tried.
Yes, I just wish that we could have seen it on the biggest screen possible.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we had to watch it at home, but
that 85-inch TV, I know they have bigger now, so let's think about that.
It's on the Criterion channel. Give it a shot.
Yes. That was our discussion of the Chinese film Resurrection, and this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbender, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed Kristen Stewart's film, The Chronology of Water. Let's take this moment to thank Aaron Bradford for directing the show. We thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from the author Katie Kosvinsky. Pain's like water. Sometimes you have to let yourself sink inside of it before you can learn how to swim to the surface. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.